Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. May we have your name, sir?
My name is Demetrius Wade Moore.
Okay, now if you hold just one moment, the Honorable Mr. Louis Colitis is going to lead your hearing this morning. He will be the chair for your hearing, so just hang on. And the next voice you will hear will be the Honorable Mr. Louis Colitis, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Can you state your name or your full name and your ADC number for the record?
Demetrius Wade Moore, number 119483.
Thank you, sir. You are appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 3144B hearing to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. They are in the room, and I'll begin with the opposite side of where I'm sitting, working toward me, the closest to you. We have the Honorable Mr. David Neal. The center of the bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. My name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for this hearing. And next to me is Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. I will begin this hearing with the following summary. Mr. Demetrius Moore is 50 years old. He's currently serving a life sentence for murder in the first degree, numerous concurrent counts of kidnapping, armed robbery, and aggravated assault ranging from 5 to 10 years, which have since expired. He is pending a 10-year consecutive sentence for kidnapping. The incident offense occurred on or about June 30th, 1994, when Mr. Moore was approximately 25 years old. Does this sound correct so far, Mr. Moore?
Yes, sir, it does.
Thank you. He was convicted by a jury trial December 7th, 1995, and sentenced February 9th, 1996. Mr. Moore has an extensive criminal history dating back to 1984, including arrests for public sexual indecency, criminal damage, assault, unlawful use of transportation, unlawful sale of narcotic drugs, firearms offenses, domestic violence, and aggravated assault. And I recognize, Mr. Moore, this was all before you were convicted for the incident offense. I'll read a brief summary of the offense. On June 30th, 1994, Mr. Moore was one of 7 defendants involved in a home invasion, kidnapping, drug robbery, homicide, which victimized 9 persons and resulted in the shooting death of Mr. Alberto Perez Soto. The pre-sentencing report was long and a bit confusing, and that's through no fault of yours, Mr. Moore, but this particular report involved a lot of different moving parts about your co-defendants. So I'll give you a good opportunity to explain the crime later in the hearing. This was a felony murder case in which Mr. Moore was a co-conspirator and not the shooter. Does that sound correct, Mr. Moore?
Yes, sir, it does.
And again, I will ask Mr. Moore to explain his role in the murder later during the hearing. Mr. Moore has completed extensive programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections to include several community college classes. His hearing is to consider parole to his next sentence, but he has a release plan which includes support from his family and work. To his credit, he has almost no history of discipline in the Department of Corrections, with his last ticket a major in 2003, in which he was found not guilty. So we certainly commend you for your behavior inside DOC, Mr. Moore.
Thank you, sir.
This is your first hearing before the board. We recognize you submitted a lengthy statement, and you have numerous letters of support from friends and family. And as of this morning, we are pleased to tell you we also have several supporters in the room.
Yes, sir.
They will be given a chance to speak on your behalf near the end of the hearing, okay, sir?
Okay.
Now, Mr. Moore, this is your first opportunity for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us in your own words about the crimes that led to incarceration and why you think You should be considered for parole to your next consecutive sentence. Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Field. What happened, I was back in Tucson, and I was involved in a crime that's taken up the life of another human being, which is the most egregious crime known to man. And I just had hooked up with the wrong people, and I was involved in selling marijuana. And there came a point to where I was going to do a marijuana deal with another individual named Mike Navarrete, and I was with James Ramirez, who should be in the report. And then for the deal to take place, they had called back with information that they knew where the marijuana was. So instead of wanting to purchase the marijuana, we decided that we were going to go and steal the marijuana. So Mr. Ramirez had gone with some of his friends, and then I had a couple of my friends in that, and we had got together and plotted to steal the marijuana from this house. And on June 30th, 1994, the plan was put into motion into where Mr. Perez Soto lost his life. And for that, I'm truly sorry for it. And just words cannot explain my remorse for being involved in this egregious crime, and that, so I was involved with Mr. Jose Wilson-Norm, Eduardo Contreras, Anthony Scott, Anthony Bonwell, and James Ramirez. And Mr. Villasenor and Mr. Contreras and Mr. Scott and Mr. Bonwell went into these people's residence and attempted to steal the marijuana. And then during this attempt to steal the marijuana, and they burglarized the house, they went in the house, and not knowing that there was going to be a family in there, Perez Soto attempted to stop these individuals from the crime that we were committing. And during that process, Mr. Villasenor shot Mr. Perez Soto and fatally wounded him in that. And I am responsible for Mr. Perez's death, because I play a role in this crime. And I victimized this family. I brought a disservice to our community. And I'm just asking for the community's forgiveness in this. And I've made myself a better person for this, that I may go and be an asset to our community. I have had no tickets here in the Department of Correction. I've always got up every day believing that I need to be a better person for our community, for my family, for my community. And so I just want to tell the honorable members of this board, I was not raised like this. My mother and my father, they always wanted better for us, and my moral compass had got skewed, sir, and to where that led me into this incident event in which Mr. Perez Soto lost his life. And I've spent 25 years here in prison being a burden to our community while teachers are, not getting paid, and kids are losing their extracurricular activities because the state hasn't had to support me. And I'm truly sorry for this, sir. And I just want to do better and be an asset to our community.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. First of all, there's some questions I want to ask you, but I want to say that I am impressed with your sense of accountability. And I think that was a very strong statement. Each of the board members votes independently, and we have to make some hard decisions on behalf of the people of Arizona. But
yes, sir.
I do appreciate you taking the people of Arizona into account for your own future, for making references to how things unfolded for you. And I think that's a good start. I think it's safe to say that we do want to see people be rehabilitated and succeed if they're given an opportunity to return to the community. But I'm going to start with some background questions. Just to understand the whole of your case, it looks like between 1984 and 1994 that you were involved in a variety of criminal acts. So what was going on? I guess that would be between the ages of 15 and 25, is that correct, sir?
No, that would be juvenile, sir.
Well, I'm just saying, we do look at your juvenile history.
Yes, sir.
So what was going on in your life that led you down that path?
I was just immature, and I know, like, you had said something about dealing drugs or something.
Well, I was just reviewing your criminal history, and sometimes they do get commingled, but
yes, sir.
I'll review very quickly based on the pre-sentencing report. There's criminal damage, a couple of assault arrests, unlawful use of transportation, a lawful sale of narcotic drug in Tucson in 1989. It was dismissed.
Right.
No, granted, it was dismissed. But
yes,
that arrest does exist in your record. So, did that arrest exist?
That arrest did exist, and it was found out in court that I was not the person somebody
okay.
was using my identity, and it was dismissed.
Okay. Fair enough. You have a couple of violations out of, or at least one violation out of Seattle, and I know that you have some sort of connection to the city of Seattle, is that right?
Yes, sir.
This one says firearm dangerous weapon violation, 180 days in jail with 170 days suspended. So is that all of your history in Seattle?
Yes, sir.
So I still don't think you've answered the question, and that is what was going on in your youth that led to your lifestyle?
Sir, I was being rebellious, I was immature, and I thought I knew everything, and I didn't have to listen to my parents. And I was with the wrong crowd.
I assure you, Mr. Moore, as an individual, again, because we vote independently, I'm asking a question that I'm not going to hold against you, I just want to understand your history. Were you involved in games when you were young?
No, sir, I was not.
It was just the company you were keeping?
It was just the company in the neighborhood that I was keeping. And there was no gangs in our neighborhood.
I have a curiosity, and that is about this crime. This was an attempted robbery of money or drugs?
Marijuana, sir.
Okay, and how much marijuana was at stake?
I believe it was like 100 to 200 pounds of marijuana.
is to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence, although I recognize that next sentence is fairly short.
Yes, sir.
And the serious charge is the one we're dealing with now. But should you return to the community, I saw that you have plans that include support from family and work, but what are your bigger plans? Meaning, is it to stay in Arizona or to return to Washington? What are your plans?
Sir, my bigger plans, because in September of 1995, I accepted Jesus Christ in my life, and that's what has kept me and brought me and matured me into the man that I have become. And my significant other, they have a church in Vancouver, Washington, and my bigger plan is to go and to be a pastor at this church, that I may help the youth in the community and to do my part to give back to the community. And I believe that in this, because I found myself, sir, when I fell at the feet of Jesus Christ, I found myself. And I'm at peace, and I know that God wants better for my life. And I want to just give back to the community that I have taken from, sir. And I just want to be an outreach and to talk to children, at-risk youth, and to be an asset to our community that our community needs, sir, to do my part. But I will stay in Arizona to fulfill whatever obligations that I owe to the state of Arizona, because I want to complete my every obligation to the state of Arizona.
Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir.
I was just going to say, we both know that this is about parole to your next consecutive sentence, but if you return to the community, do you still have family in Arizona?
Yes, sir, I do.
Okay, so you have some support in Arizona, because these interstate compact transfers don't happen overnight.
Yes,
if that's your plan, or if that's where this ends. And it's good to know that an individual has an immediate plan for dealing with the state of Arizona until that they can pursue an interstate compact. So,
yes, sir.
I did want to understand that.
Yes, I have a sister and brother-in-law in Prescott Valley, Arizona. And my mother is in Tucson, Arizona. And I have a brother in Tucson, Arizona, as well as numerous, and another sister in Tucson, Arizona, and numerous nieces and nephews in Tucson.
What else, my fellow board members, do you have any questions for you, Mr. Morgan? Yes, I do. Mr. Johnson.
Sir, in your letter, I believe you stated in your letter that you wrote to the board that you weren't there when the homicide occurred, or what happened? Where were you? What was your role in it? I know you say that you were going to set it up, but were you there when the actual incident took place?
No, sir, I was not.
So what was your role, sir?
My role was just to, I knew about it, and that, and I encouraged it, and I was supposed to get a cut of it. I was going to get the marijuana given to me at a wholesale price, and then I had the buyers for the marijuana, and I was going to sell the marijuana and then give everybody, you know, take my cut off the top of what they sold it to me, and then give them the money for them to split it up.
So why weren't you there? Did you just provide them with the information, or what?
I was just part of the information, providing the information, and that I was not there.
All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
You're
Mr. Moore, quick question. Was there a clear leader in this crime?
town was.
Because of the planning and I read part of the report where I think you were involved also in disposing of the, or at least a plan to dispose of the firearm, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And again, you had some sort of network that you could move to marijuana through?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Any further questions? Yes, Dr. Wright.
I'm still trying to, thank you so much for being here today, Mr. Moore, and some things that we asked me will be, termination will be made from the supporters, but I'm still trying to understand the incident offense itself. Now, you, how did you become the leader of this group? I mean, you was going to disperse the weapons, and you were going to disperse the marijuana. You know, this was not a small, I mean, maybe it was, because I'm not an expert on marijuana, any other drugs by any means, but 200 pounds of marijuana, that's a lot, you know, that's not like a few ounces, that's a lot. And I'm just wondering, how did you emerge as the planner, as the person who was organizing this the robbery, and then later, if it had been successful, the disbursement of the product itself, sir?
Well, sir, it took a combination of us to do it, and like I said, in my part was that I was the one that was able to distribute the marijuana and have the buyers for it. So in meeting with these individuals, with James Ramirez, he was friends with the guy Michael Navarrete, who knew the people that were selling the marijuana, and then he gave the information, Michael Navarrete gave the information to James Ramirez that, hey, well, I know where these people live. Why don't we just go over there and steal the marijuana?
And you kind of organized for them to do it. You were kind of the leader, or I guess the leader, to get it all organized. But you know, that was a big business deal. That was, you know, like a multi-corporation. You know, all the parts had to fit in place except something went wrong in terms of the murder. But what qualified you to be the leader, I guess, is what I'm trying to figure out, sir.
Because I knew who to sell the marijuana to.
And how did you know these people? I mean, it's who to sell it to, sir.
Because when I had moved back to Tucson from Seattle, and I had hooked up with an old friend of mine named David, and he was trafficking marijuana. So that's how I was hanging out with him, and I started trafficking marijuana with him, and that's how I knew people that will buy marijuana.
Okay. Let me just jump ahead. I have one other question, and this is just for information, just for edification. It says that in your letter you said that you participated in this inside-out prison exchange program down at Arizona State University. How does that program, was it, this was in 2017, is that a successful program? How did you feel about that program after participating in that program, sir?
Dr. Wright, that program is just eye-opening. It's just, it was a wake-up call, you know, that further confirmed what I believe in and the changes that I have made. And it wakens you up to the realities of the damage of what crime does to our communities. And it gets so, we have 10 outside students coming in from ASU, and then the 10, offenders here are taking a class with a professor from ASU, and it's hard for me to explain that just the knowledge that I got from this class, and it does have me motivated to pursue a criminal justice degree also, you know, that I can use this in my outreach to the community.
Okay, sir. I commend you for being in that program. It sounds like a very interesting and successful program. I really commend you for that. Hopefully you can take those leadership of skills that you had, and I guess that you still have, and once you're out and use them in a positive way, because it sounds to me, you know, that you had, that you certainly had leadership skills to organize that whole thing dealing with the marijuana. I mean, that was not going to be the easiest thing in the world if everything had worked out. As you look towards the future, I guess you just answered this question, but you expect to get your criminal justice degree from ASU, and what do you plan to do with that degree, sir?
Sir, I want to use it as an outreach to the community, to reach at-risk children and to counsel. And a lot of things that doesn't show up on my institutional record, Dr. Wright, is that I do tutor people, you know, and I talk to guys one-on-one. My mother has received calls from individuals that who have left prison and said that, you know, that the impact, the positive impact that I have made in their lives. And these things make me feel good, Dr. Wright, and I want to continue this work, and that's why I'm asking for this honorable board's grace that they will let me continue going forward, that I may be, you know, a productive, tax-paying, law-abiding citizen of our community, because the things that I have done and worked with individuals in here, and with Bible studies, you know, one-on-one, and I want to continue that work as an outreach to our community.
And just one quick question for management, time management first. Just one quick question. You mentioned, you know, your faith several times, and so when did you accept, I guess that's the right word, Christian religion, and why did you accept it, and you said that you plan to be a pastor up in the state of Washington. When did you become so involved in terms of Christian religion, sir?
Sir, it was in October 1994, I accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and my Savior. And I just knew that something had to change about me, you know, that my moral compass was wrong, and I just asked the Lord if he could do something with my life. Here I am, do something with my life, Lord. And he has led me and guided me and groomed me these 25 years, making me into the man that I am today, a changed man, Dr. Wright.
Thank you. Thank you for taking up so much time. Thank you so very much, Mr. Moore. Thank you, Mr. Kowalis.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Neal.
Going back to the crime and your organization skills and everything, you were going to dispose of the guns. Did you supply guns for that?
So I supplied one gun for that.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out where they came from. Thank you, Chris.
So yes, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Ma, I'm still trying to kind of figure out your role in this incident, in this robbery. So you said that someone else knew the guy, someone else knew where the guy lived, and they planned to go do the robbery. And your role in it was to, once they robbed them, that they were going to sell it to you at a discounted price, and you were going to distribute it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I'm just a little bit confused because you're saying that you were the leader, but were you involved in the planning of actually going to commit the robbery and stealing the marijuana, or was your enrollment involvement going to be after that was done, then you were going to be the person who was going to distribute it?
Yes, I knew, and I was in the planning of the robbery, sir.
Okay.
Because I was there when it was going on, and I condoned it.
Okay, so you were there when they planned on doing the robbery?
Yes, sir.
So
I was not there when it took place.
So let me ask you a question. You were there when they planned the robbery. You were going to distribute the marijuana after the robbery. So why weren't you there when they committed the robbery? How did you get out of not being actually at the scene?
Because I was not going to go. My part was to sell the marijuana. that you're going to get.
Okay. Okay, thank you, sir.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Yes, sir, you're right.
Just one quick question. You may not have an answer to this one. Do you know what happened to your conspirators? What happened to them? Do you have an idea that they ended up incarcerated, or what happened to them?
The one, the last shooter, he is incarcerated, and a couple of them got probation for their testimony, and another one that got 19 years for his part, or 16 years or so.
So it's only, to the best of your knowledge, and I know you may not have an answer, but to the best of your knowledge, only two of you ended up, for being in there for 25 years, and that was the person who did the shooting and yourself. Is that your...
Yes, sir.
But you might have heard it from some source or another. Yes, sir. Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Just a quick follow-up question, Mr. Moore, then we want to give your supporters an opportunity to speak before the board. Back then, did you consider the possibility that there would be violence? I mean, I was working in Tucson at that time, and we recognized how much drug violence was going on, specifically drug robberies like this.
Yes, sir.
But had you really considered that when those guys went in to steal the marijuana armed, that someone could die in the robbery?
No, sir, Mr. Quinones, I did not think of that at all.
I think, to be honest with me, it's just unfortunate, because when people get involved in that illegal enterprise, we'll call it, the violence is so close, and I often wonder if the individuals are really realizing how close they are to that violence, specifically around robbery, or debt collection, or debts paid. You know, we know the game. Also, I guess that was about $120,000 worth of marijuana, is that right?
I can't recall what the price was, sir, at that time.
Well, what do you think it was a pound back then, per pound?
Well, Mr. Kielich, it's probably like $600, right. Or we'll say, like, you know, depending on the quality of it, you know.
I don't mean to make light of this, but I was thinking about $600 a pound just from memory, too.
Right.
I guess we're both young people back then. Okay, we're getting to that stage of the hearing that we want to hear from your supporters. So before we move forward, I recognize we have several. Can I see a show of hands and who's going to speak today? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people, right? Okay, we do need to manage time. I'm not going to cut you off, but we don't necessarily need to hear much more than 5 minutes a person, so, and we don't need to hear the same thing twice. I mean, it'd be rude, but we do have to manage time. So whoever wants to come up first?
Pastor,
yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Should I go right? Yes, right to the podium.
There's a green light. The light up.
Yeah, the green light is
okay. If you could state your name, sir.
My name is Reverend Ray Lang, L-A-N-D.
And what would you like to share with the board this morning, sir?
Well, I would like to share, I can attest to his character. I was incarcerated with him. I met him in 1996. When I was falsely accused of a crime, wrongly convicted, and I was in the walls with him, and me and him had Bible studies. In fact, he was one of my mentors. He was one of my mentors. And even today, I go back into prison. I'm going into South Unit this Saturday. 3 months ago, I was on East Unit where he is, and a lot of where I am today is because of him. I go all over America preaching the gospel, going into prisons, telling people about the gospel and the good news of Jesus Christ. And he's really living that real, like he said in 94, I met him in 95, we was in the walls together, and he's really a true man of God, a real man of God. I got got a letter from him the other day that was sent to Prison Fellowship that I got late, or I would have wrote a letter, but I just got it like Saturday. So I had to rearrange my whole schedule to come through here real quick. But he is a true man of God, and I believe he's going to do everything that he said. Like I said, I got out in 2008. I did 13 years, won my appeal, got licensed, ordained, wrote a book, going into prison, teaching a book. And if anybody can go out and do exactly what I'm doing or even more, it's this guy. He's one of the ones that I know that's going to go out and do it. Because I mentor 100 dudes when they get out, a lot of guys. And he's one of the ones that I know when he gets out, he's not going to be hard to mentor or to help or whatever. We're going to do anything we can to help him.
A quick question, sir. And again, this is not your doing. And I trust that what you're telling us is accurate, Reverend. How long were you inside the Department of Corrections?
13 years.
Okay.
I was sentenced to 33 years, and I won my appeal. And I got out in 13 years. I got out in 2008. I've been out about 10 years now. And I, right after I started doing revivals, started preaching the gospel, got licensed, ordained, preaching in Tucson this Saturday, this Sunday. I mean, that's all we do. Me and my wife is kingdom business, but he knows that. And he was one of my mentors, like I said. So everything he's telling me, I came in kind of late because I didn't know what time it was. I had to go to Teen Challenge to a graduation. But he's one of the ones that's going to really do well when he gets out, no question in my mind. I just heard a little bit of it because
Well, thank you, sir. I'm going to ask my fellow board members to ask any questions. Well, there are no questions. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Would you like to come up next? Thank you, Reverend.
You can pull that mic down.
Yeah.
Pull the mic down so you can.
Okay, we're going to come over to you.
Yeah.
Let me
see that here. Yes, we can hear you well, ma'am. Can you state your name for the record?
My name is Ina Cody's Reese.
And what would you like to share with the board, ma'am?
I would like to share that in my case, when I was, a good kid. You graduated from school one time, you got into some things, and I heard you mention that about the criminal damage from this childhood thing. But what it was, I guess, from this thing of being on parole, and sometimes you forget things, you know. And, but he was exonerated from that because he was in the movies theater. And they had moved from one movie to the other one. But they sent the police out there. And someone had already set a car on fire to the movie right down the National Theater and 12 there. But when they came out, they started running. So they assumed that those were the people that had done it. But then they took it to the juvenile and they were talking about the criminal damage. When they called me, they tell me, oh my God, what this kid do? But apparently he hadn't done anything, but just moved from one room to the other one. But they, I guess, found out from the car that he wasn't the person that had done that. He graduated from school on time. He went on to ITT Technical Institute and received a degree in robotics. He went to Seattle to work up there. And then he came back down to Tucson when all of this occurred. But I'm attesting to his theory and his belief in Jesus Christ, you know. I have a cyst on my pancreas, which the doctor said I probably could have been dead in 15 months of life expectancy. But when he came to tell me that he had a hearing on April the 8th, and I have an appointment with my surgeon on April the 24th to decide whether I'm going to take this surgery or not. The surgery lasts from 6 to 8 hours. So it's either that I can do that or I'm not getting that my age can survive the thing on the table. But I said, well, if he gets this hearing and I will know more or less what's going to go on, I'm going to talk to my surgeon to see if they can wait to see if I can wait to see if he's gonna get out or whatever, and he can be there for that. But he was always an honorable kid at home. We always got along well. He was never assassinated. And just knowing from the south side, knowing and doing and hanging around with people, sometimes, you know, it gets the best of us, it gets the best of them, you know. But I am asking the board to hear his speech, because I believe that he is a changed man. He's grown. He's loved by his family, his boys, his grandchildren. They're all gonna see him. They call him Grandpa D. So I'm asking y'all to give him a chance to come out. He still can work and earn a retirement at his age. Peace in my peace. And a lot of people that got out of prison came to my family. He always said trusting people to us. People that he knew that were from the cause of us and his father. They came in and were all over the parties, you know, Easter, Christmas, or whatever. And they always come. And they always say, one person was Terrence Reed, and he came to my family. And he said, Mother God, I thank God. But he said, I thank your son for asking me to go to church with him on that Wednesday night. When he got out of prison, the first thing he looked for was a church. And he stayed in church until his death. Sadly, he was sick, and he died about 5 years after he left. I miss him a lot too, Terrence, you know. But, I'm asking you to hear his speech. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for your time. Any questions from fellow board members?
Ms. Reese, do you understand that this, if he's, the board's going to make a decision whether to parole him or not parole him to his next sentence?
Yeah.
Not that he gets out, but he still has a 10-year sentence that he has to serve. So the board would be paroled him to his next consecutive sentence. Do you understand that? Okay, all right.
I don't understand a lot here.
Okay, all right. So that he... Not to say that's the decision the board's going to make, but if the board was to make a decision, it would be either to parole him to his next consecutive sentence or not parole him. So if we parole him to his next consecutive sentence, he would still have a 10-year sentence. And I'm saying that because I'm just letting you know that he wouldn't be getting out immediately. He would just be on his last sentence.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just trying to so that you would understand that.
Thank you.
Okay, all right.
Can we just speak, right?
Yes, sir. You could go ahead.
And if you'll state your name, sir.
Sorry.
Christopher Johnson. I'm his older brother.
Okay.
So, he's a good guy. And I'm going to see him every month. Excuse me. Look hard to see him in there. And all the people who talk good about him, even the guards, I wrote you guys a letter. So, all I'm asking. Just give him another chance. And I appreciate it. For my mom, for my family. And I need to thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for board members? Thank you, sir. After you return, who would like to speak next? Oh, okay. Thank you, ma'am. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
If you can state your name.
My name is Lee Brown.
And what would you like to share with the board, sir?
I'm a childhood friend of Demetrius Moore. I wrote your gentleman a letter pertaining to his release. And as the Reverend said, I too was incarcerated. I did a 20-year sentence. This August will be 6 years that I've been home. Upon my release, I made it a point to get on the visitation list for Demetrius Moore, because I know the impact of outside visits on the impact of individuals. So we were going to go visiting Demetrius Moore once a month, and we're going to continue to do so until the expiration of his time. The reason why I'm up here is that every time that I see Demetrius Moore, you know, in our business, and I speak to him face to face, ex-con to ex-con, you know, you gentlemen, you deal with this environment for years, you know what somebody's giving you BS, you know what I'm saying? So I can look at this individual in the face and know that he's grown, matured. And the guy spoke about what he was doing in his younger years. I was part of that crowd because I was from the same neighborhood. So a lot of times you get mixed up with your friends as you see them, or you think so, and you think that's the, you know, the end thing to do. But at the same time, Mr. Quinones, you don't know the end result. You may go in thinking one thing and it turns out another way, and then whole lives change because of that. But the reason, like I said, I'm here is you've heard about before, you know, he is a good individual, a good man. Regardless of the heinous crime that happened, you can't change that. You can't, you know, repair the loss of the families, their loss. But one thing I can say, looking at that man in his face, he's not BSing me when I ask him, you know, are you doing? He says he is, I believe he is. And like I said, I got my experience from talking to other individuals while I was inside. I'm going on, like I said, 6 years old. Been clean and sober 26 years. Getting ready to get married. Got with him next year. Got a job, house. I'm a successful, I guess you'd say a success story. And I believe that he too would be that individual if given that opportunity. So if anything, like the family is asking, that you would take in consideration going into his next sentence. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, well, so any questions for the board members? So I do want to thank you because I have been sitting on the board for over 2 years now, and I recognize how important it is for people inside the Department of Corrections to have positive influence on the outside, especially if it's people that have been succeeding after their prison sentence. So I find that really meaningful. I want to thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Sherry Davis, and I live in Seattle, Washington.
Well, thank you, and I just want to point out my brother is just about ready to retire from the city of Seattle.
Me too. No.
So yeah, I have some connections up there as well, but we're from here. And what would you like to share with the board this morning, ma'am?
I'd like to share that I have known Demetrius Moore for over probably about 30 years. I first met him at his grandmother's house in Seattle, Washington. His grandmother, his mother's mom was my babysitter, so she took care of my son Michael for many, many years, so I would go there every day. When Demetrius came to Seattle, he would come by often to visit his grandmother. And the young man I knew then is not the young man that you guys were describing today. He impressed me because he was a worker, and he took care of his family, he loved his family. He was a young father, he had two young boys. And so I was very impressed with him at that time. Then he moved back to Tucson, and then when his grandmother told me he had been arrested and placed in jail, I was shocked. It didn't sound like the person that I knew then as a young man, and he definitely not the person that he is today. So back then he was writing to his grandmother, and she asked me if I could help, if I could transcribe her letters, because she was having difficulties writing to him. And that's how he and I met, started writing letters. He asked if he could write to me, and I said, sure. And 25 years later, we've been writing weekly. We've been visiting. My son and I have been visiting him for years, several times a year. He is a changed person. I really believe he is a man of God. I believe he will be a positive asset to our community and our family. We are definitely in need of him to be around. He was a mentor for Michael when my son Michael was having trouble in the sixth grade. He came home with a 0.8 GPA, which was just unheard of from him. And Michael had never been in trouble in school and never given me any trouble, but he got suspended for fighting. And when I mentioned that to Demetrius, he really took notice. and stepped in as a father figure and started calling him more frequently and writing letters. And I have to say that changed Michael's life around, and he just accomplished so many things. He became the 2004 Mayor Scholars Award. He won that. He was the Youth of the Year, won King County Youth of the Year, went on to compete in the state competition and won second place. And I attribute a lot of Michael's success because he had a man in Demetrius who he called Dad. That's his dad, and that Demetrius has been his father since he was probably 4 years old. And it just made a big difference in our lives. And I just want to let you know that he is a changed man, and he wants to do good in his community. He wants to make a difference in this world. And I truly believe he will live a crime free life. And he tells us all the time, they don't have to worry about me because I'm not even jaywalking. So this is the man that I know. Thank you.
Thank you, are any questions from fellow board members? Well, thank you for appearing before the board today, and I have to tell you, you're a reminder of how many of us who grew up in hard neighborhoods could have fallen with bad influence, and I think what you've shared today is very meaningful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
If you can say your name for the record.
My name is Michael Davis.
And what would you like to share with the board, sir?
First of all, I'd just like to say that I've known this man my entire life. He has been a pillar for me ever since I was young. This is a man that's always been in my corner my entire life. And he has made an impact that no one on the outside would really know or understand. But he's been extremely positive, extremely. So just to tell you a little bit about myself, I was born and raised in Seattle. I grew up, my mom probably talked about, you know, when I was younger, sixth grade, had terrible GPAs. I got suspended for fighting. I've been involved in, you know, some when I was in sixth grade. So really young, and my dad was there even before that, afterwards. We've always had talks on the phone, and he calls me all the time. He is not my biological father, but he is one that I consider my father. He's calls every single birthday, just about every week we talk. And he's been there more than my biological dad, who was only a few miles away from me. So, you know, for him, I really commend him for that, for being there. Adult life, I moved to Arizona in 2010. Got accepted into the University of Arizona. I didn't go there right away. I went to Pima Community College. I was accepted into multiple universities after high school. I went to a private high school. I've won multiple awards. I've done a lot for the community, a lot. And I'm also a man of God. I do go to church, and I am a believer. A lot of it is due to him. A lot of that. So, I did not write a letter. I didn't send it in because I thought this would be more meaningful than a letter for you to hear from myself. Didn't even prepare a speech or anything like that. Just to tell you about the man that he is. And adult life again. I've held a job at Costco for the past 8 years. It's been treating me very well. So I have my associate's degree. Still working on my bachelor's, so that'll be in place. And I'm still making a positive impact on my community and everyone around me. So, you know, if you can see the impact that he's done in my life, and I'm 26 years old, I'm just about the age that he was when he made all these mistakes that I'm just now learning from him. And, you know, he's helped me avoid the path that he's been on in his life. So if you can look at me and look at him and see how he's impacted me and where I'm heading in life, I can't imagine how many other people that he will help, especially young men who who are on paths where they're heading nowhere. So I don't know if you can see anything in myself and the positive impacts I made and what I'm doing with my life and what he can do on the outside when he gets out. I mean, I really can't even see that, but there's no doubt in my mind that he would really impact a lot of us on the outside for the positive and better reasons. And he has been just a major player in my life. And I don't know where I would be without him. I really don't. So thank you, Dad. I appreciate everything you've done for me. And I love you. And hopefully we'll see you soon.
It's okay, but it's, we have protocol that you just address the board. We try to avoid dialogues between you and the person inside. But I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Any questions from fellow board members? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I will make sure that, has everyone spoken, needs to speak this morning? Okay. Again, thank you to all the supporters this morning. Mr. Moore, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. We do not have any victims' representatives this morning. And sometimes we do. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us. This has been a fairly lengthy hearing. But is there a final statement you would like to make before we go into discussion?
Yes, sir. I would just like to tell you, Mr. Quinones, that I'm just happy for you guys' grace and mercy that you will allow me to go to this consecutive sentence, that I may be able to be the productive taxpaying law-abiding citizen that I want to be, sir. I want to be an asset to our community, and I just ask for your grace and mercy to help me reach that goal. And I am truly sorry for the crime. I'm sorry for the damage that I did to this family. And as a man, I am sorry for having to put this honorable board in the position to have to judge me, because a man should not have to do that. And I am remorseful for what I did, and I will be better. And I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, especially because this is the first time you've appeared before the board, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you'll just stay on the phone, and we need to stay on the phone, listen into the discussion, and we'll come back shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
The board is now in discussion. Both board members, I recognize that this is Mr. Moore's first time before the board. He has several of his lighter sentences associated with this crime have already expired. So it comes down to the major crime and a consecutive sentence. I think he has shown really strong development inside the Department of Corrections in many ways. Certainly I do appreciate that he's been able to keep his behavior and discipline under control for quite a while. And it seems that he's taken full advantage of programming and education that's available to him inside the Department of Corrections, as well as a bit of productive inmate, so to speak. I also believe that some of the community's work, not some, all of the community support we've heard this morning has been very meaningful. I think Mr. Moore is sincere about his remorse. I think he's sincere about his efforts to pursue rehabilitation. And although I never really know what is in someone's mind or heart, I'm inclined to believe him when he states, and I ask the question, as to whether or not he really thought through the possibility of what could happen in a crime like this. I'm not trying to exonerate him. He recognizes his role and the consequences of his role. But I think, as do a lot of young people who are under bad influence, they don't see it through. They don't see the possibility of being involved in this type of crime ending in injuries or death. And I think that he's certainly on a good path. So that's where we begin the discussion. I'll say that I am open to the possibility of parole to his next consecutive sentence, but I really want to hear from my colleagues. Yes, Your Honor, Mr. Johnson.
I'm impressed that Mr. Morrow's been in prison for 25 years and able to maintain the record that he has maintained. And his record to me is he's clearly displayed that he has a desire to do good and to stay out of trouble. I'm also impressed with the work that he's done since he's been in prison, and hearing from Reverend Land, who actually served 13 years in prison, and says that Mr. Moore was a mentor to him, as well as Mr. Bell, who served 20 years, and says that Mr. Moore was also a mentor to him. But I'm also overly impressed with the young man, Michael Davis, who testified about the role that Mr. Moore played in his life, and the mentorship that he played, and that, you know, he wouldn't be the person that he is today, you know, had he not been, Mr. Moore not been involved in his life. And there's another letter that's in the file from Christopher Morgan, who says that he's right now a technical sergeant in the U.S. Armed Air Force, and that he's going to be commissioned to a second lieutenant on May 31st of this year. But he says that he's not the biological son, but that he was basically raised by Mr. Moore, and he wouldn't have accomplished and be the man that he is today without, you know, the influence of Mr. Moore. I think that in this particular case, although it is Mr. Moore's first time coming before this board, but I think he has displayed the discipline that he has and the remorse that he has for the crime that he was actually involved in committed. I think he's been extremely honest with us at this point and taking full responsibility for his actions. I would be supportive of paroling Mr. Moore to his next consecutive sentence based on the information and things I just spoke on.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Yes, Your Honor, Mr. Mule.
Yes, sir. I am impressed. Usually we see somebody with this kind of sentencing with that many crimes come in, and although by the time they spent 25 years come from this, their, you know, their behavior was pretty good, but they usually start out pretty poor. And he started right out with good behavior in prison, and that's not a mean place to behave yourself. I mean, we see it all the time. The inmate tries not to get in trouble, but the other inmates don't allow that to happen. But I'm also very impressed, not only from the fact that he, the two people that spent time with him in the OC came to speak, but I'm impressed with both of those people very much so, that they've been able to do so well with their lives, and they attribute it to the mentoring they had from this man while they were in, and it continued mentoring. And I personally can't imagine how hard it must be to really mentor, especially if a child old phone from a long distance away like that. You've got to be able to have a good influence on people to be able to do that. And
Sunday visitation isn't like being able to, you know, see your grandkids, see your child, see your friend on a regular basis. So I go back to the first time in front of the board, I have to agree that not normally we want to see a little bit more, but I would be open to probably his next consecutive sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dillon. Dr. Wright?
Three of my distinct comments, sir.
Okay, well, I am going to go ahead and make a motion. Before I do, I thought of a few things that were being said. I am reminded that it's important to look at everything. There's certainly people inside the Department of Corrections or inside various prison systems that may behave well inside prison, but it's just only one factor. We don't see the whole picture of their behavior, what's really going on inside the person. So I try hard to look at everything, and I think that there's a very good everything happening here in terms of his community support, his behavior, his programming. I think he shows tremendous potential. Also, if he had negative influence when he's young, he seems to have sought good influence after that, and I think that's really important. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion, and that is regarding Mr. Demetrius Moore, ADC number 119483. My motion is to grant parole to his next consecutive sentence, but deny absolute discharge, and that is my motion.
Second.
Seconded by the Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Agreed.
Agreed by the Honorable Mr. Neal.
Agreed.
And agreed by the Honorable Dr. Wright. Just 1 second. And that is release type granted. Consecutive. Release type denied. Absolute discharge. And we have some, it's not true release, but some conditions associated with granting parole to the next consecutive sentence, and that is certainly to abide by institutional rules, so continue that good behavior, partake in available programs, so continue to do that too, and to continue to refrain from disciplinary infractions. So that is also a very strong statement about Mr. Moore. Okay, Mr. Moore, have you heard the board's vote and our position?
Yes, sir, I have, and I thank you for it.
Okay, sir, so again, we are granting you parole to your next consecutive sentence, denying absolute discharge. You will be certified for a hearing again. Unfortunately, it is going to take a while for you to use up or to burn up some of the next sentence before you're eligible to appear before the board again. But it is much quicker than the 25 years you just served. So we encourage you to continue your good behavior. And we hope to see you eventually get an opportunity to return to the community while you're still young, to serve the community, and we do wish you the best. Any further information for my colleagues? Okay, then this will bring our hearing to a close, and thank you for appearing before the board today, Mr. Moore. Stay safe.
Thank you, sir. Okay.